So I've been wanting to do this episode for a very long time. I was very concerned about how it would be to leave the classroom, and I pretty much procrastinated.
Just a little bit.
A little bit.
Months and months of procrastination.
And then finally, for one of the episodes of the Delta, everything was going on, and I'm like, and also, I've decided to leave the classroom, and more on that later. And
surprise!
So I think it's time. We need to cover it.
Yeah.
You ready?
Yep.
All right. So we have a lot and a little bit to discuss, right? I mean, that there's been so much going on with politics that we finally just had to take a break from covering the issues of the day and what was actually going on. Every single time that we turned around, there was more decisions being made, more laws being passed, more controversies being started, more media. It's a storm. All the time.
Yes.
And I mean, it was said best by Rachel, I think. Everyone's swimming in trauma. Like, that's just what it is.
Yeah, for sure.
So I want to take a step back and just talk about our family just for a little bit, what we've actually kind of done, and pretty much just me. Me, 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 me.
I don't need to be here, so I will see you guys next time.
No, but I think it really dramatically affected you and the family.
Absolutely.
Just as much as it did whenever I was going through it, trying to figure out my identity. It was almost like it was an identity crisis coupled with more so an existential crisis that some people might mirror as like a midlife crisis. It was just like all these like turmoil and crisis of what I was supposed to do with the rest of my time, feeling like I had so much more to do and give, but I felt like I couldn't do it. Though I just couldn't go the way I wanted to go.
Well, and on top of all that, the third aspect you kept going back to was, aren't my student loans supposed to be paid off? I've been teaching for 10 years.
Right.
Aren't you, you would have been, it would have been 11 years this coming August. Yeah.
Right.
And you're like, my student loans should have been paid off.
Right.
And all this stuff. And they were like, well, the last I checked, it said, I can't remember what month, but the year was 2026.
Right.
And I was like, hold on a second. How is that fair?
Right.
So on top of all of the emotional struggles and everything that went into that, you also have to worry about all the financial struggles that student loans have weighed down on you. Do I try to suck it up, handle it, you know, with all the things going on with me mentally and emotionally and, you know, all of that? I mean, if I have to teach for another year to 4 years, you know, then I can try to do that. And there was one point where you said that, and I said, I have to be extremely honest. Do you remember this conversation?
Yes.
I have to be so honest. I love you so much. But you wake up in the morning and you're angry and you're complaining and you drive to work and call me because it was a long drive for you, 45 minutes. And you would be angry and you would be complaining about not just work, but all the things.
Right.
Then you would come home and you would be angry and you just repeated the cycle. And I said, I love you so much. I don't know if we'll make it if you do that. You cannot go back. It wasn't the people. Admin was amazing to you.
Right.
And I really liked them as well. It was just so many other things.
Right. And I think what it comes down to, and that needs to be directly stated, is that the administration, the community, that school, the kids,
they took care of you.
Everyone there, we left on such good terms.
Right.
And it was hard. It was hard and had nothing to do with them.
Right. The real kicker had to have been like, okay, well, we're going to go to graduation. And hey, Mr. Link, you know, the graduating class or the junior class have been talking. We'd like you to be the senior speaker for graduation next year.
Right. Right. And that was one of those things that I really felt good. Like, okay, I'm leaving.
I guess they don't hate me.
But they want one last lecture almost.
Right.
You know what I mean? But really what it comes down to being is nothing to do with anything personal or professional or anything like that with the people that I still hold near and dear to me as much as I possibly can.
Yeah.
It has everything to do with what I saw school becoming from what politically had been positioned to pretty much make it a failure. And I couldn't look at that every single day as my school being a microcosm of the state and the state of Missouri being a microcosm of the entire United States. And looking at it every single day in that way hurt. And I started journaling. I started writing
yeah.
a lot to try to work through it. And I want to share more of those today as my reaction. So,
sounds good.
My reaction. School is dead. It will never be what I know it could be. And as a teacher, it is killing me slowly. Till those in power admit incompetence, many, including myself, are leaving. But I'm not holding my breath. Many feel this, but few wrote extensively and ambitiously argued for radical change. But I'm not alone. I'm not an island. I'm just another member of the silenced choir. In the classroom, teachers stick to the approved curriculum. We guard our words and opinions for the safety of not only our careers, but the preservation of our schools and the paternalism of our students against the hostile government intent on the failure of the school system. Opportunistic politicians pass laws in search of problems, using the voteless population to maintain power, sacrificing children as pawns for political gain. This was the realization when the valedictorian told me during the last week of their high school career that they did not know how to vote in the upcoming election. 18 years old, without the challenge of interpreting legislation, formulating personal opinions over controversial topics, and even being presented with the reality of the world they were inheriting. This is the forced failure of education. The intentional reduction of critical thinking is purposeful. The perpetuation of ignorance is intentional. We are told to stay within our subject without expressing our personal opinion. They strip the curriculum of social context, and they accuse us as indoctrination and worse. This push toward the bland and boring lessons under the guise of protection is to make intellectualism daunting and dull, to stereotype academics as nerds, constructing content-heavy homework that has no attachment to the practical application means when are we ever going to use this is by design. The persistent pursuit of anti-intellectualism ultimately generates disinterest in politics. Politics is portrayed as a confusing and complicated. This is the goal. Education is not to create critical thinkers, but discourage participation due to perceived personal inadequacies, overall ignorance, and overwhelming despair. The goal of education, it seems, is to create a jaded public. The opiate of the masses is defeatism. So how do we change the world for the better? The answer? We don't. So what do we do? The answer? Nothing. This, though, is not fatalism. This approach is accept that idealism is regression. Embrace progressivism as failure. Idealism is an illusion. It appeals to the theory of forms, perfection, philosopher kings, and a republic. And better is not just relative. It is a relative of the perfect ideal form. One never makes things better toward an end. You just keep things going. Survival, no matter how savage. In the great American experiment, persistence through defeat is essential, which means that defeat is essential to progress. The ruthless, natural selection of antiquated ideologies is required. American idealism is a melting pot of pluralism. Instead, through forms of self-segregation, America has become a simmering stew with vast areas of thin participation speckled with chunks of density. With party extremists, America is reaching a boiling point. Most are pleading for a middle ground. Adults just need to calm down and take the pot and kettle off the stove. States are becoming experiments for these ideologies, experiments racing toward the extremes in each party, volatile, reactionary politics. But the states will not survive these trials. The nation will not recover from this deliberate dichotomy. Instead, we must engage the valedictorian. In fact, all the students, the entire education system, to produce active members that are informed, engaged, and ambitious to alter the political environment. Schools should provoke debate, collide with controversy, and challenge the prejudice of the previous generations. School is not meant to reinforce the ideologies of the antiquated thinking that produce the issues that they face. School is to help children outgrow parents and guardians. America is not a melting pot. It is not a kettle. America is a crucible.
The real real.
So in your reaction, you used the phrase crucible school.
Right.
Can you explain that, what that means to you?
Sure. So a crucible is something that is a vessel that you heat something up in very, very hot. Like most of the time we use them in chemistry to be able to make a reaction happen faster. You have such a high activation energy level for most reactions that take place that you have to make it super hot and then it goes boom, like it goes much faster, right?
Right.
So you get more products from the reactants. And what I kind of look at it from when I was talking to my father at one point in time, he was reading some of the stuff that I was writing and I just dropped this term, crucible school, as just like a little bitty end of a sentence, right?
Yeah.
And he latched on to it. And at that point in time, I started really thinking about it, about what we really needed, in my opinion, to accomplish what I saw us doing in America. And it really scares me from the standpoint that we do not trust students whatsoever with the future that they're going to be inheriting. And it was very frustrating because I saw training throughout the entire part of their careers. And I did some of this in the hidden curriculum. I did some of this when I was talking to Adam about, like, if they would just ask why, and if we didn't standardize tests of them and try to make schools fail, and if we weren't trying to push everything to charter schools because we were defunding them and then blaming them for failing because we weren't actually giving anybody any kind of, like, context, and we're not actually distributing the concepts on such a small level, and we're not actually giving content that is relevant to their, like, it's just so many different possible solutions to this problem. Yeah. But then I started to really realize that, like, it's not me at all that needs to be solving this whatsoever. Like, I could design the perfect system that I would think would work perfectly, and it would be horrible. It'd be absolutely trash, because the system that I would be designing is the system that I grew up in. And I'd be like, oh, these are the problems I see. These are problems that I knew of whenever I was in school that I see now as an adult.
Sure.
Like, they know what's coming. They can see down the road. They know the problems that they care about, that they're going to be voting about and really trying to push the government to be able to be. And I'm not saying that every single school should just be this political, like, mealy, like, it shouldn't be like this arena where everything just goes in and people just war it out all the time about political ideas. But what I do think that we should be doing is making it so that we don't avoid that and give them a safe environment to do and debate these types of things and work out solutions that are actually applicable to their daily lives. It's like, why are we not using schools, all schools, but high schools specifically, all around the world, to be able to say, listen, we don't care about any of the rest of science. No, none of it matters. You know what I mean? None of this matters. Except for the biggest project we want you to do is solve climate change. Go.
Right.
And they take all of their fluid intelligence at that point in time, and within 4 years, a graduating class goes from freshman to senior, and they go, like, we got it. We did it. And the adults go, yeah, we never thought of that. It's because, like, you're locked in your old way of thinking. You can't figure it out. But we put a bunch of high schoolers' minds on it, and they said, we got it. We know exactly what we're supposed to do.
When I always think of fluid versus crystallized intelligence. I always say it, you know, so you know what I'm going to say, but I always think of the little story that someone told me that said, oh yeah, this, you know, this man was driving a semi and went under a bridge and it was too tall. And so it got stuck, which I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's like a riddle, right?
Right, right. Got stuck. Tons of adults standing there trying to figure out the problem, cannot get it out from under there. And a kid walks by and they say, and you know, he says, well, why don't you just let the air out of the tires? And that worked. So whether or not that's a true story, I mean, it's very, it shows that, yeah, sometimes kids have solutions that adults don't have the answers for.
Right. Right.
So listen to them sometimes.
Right. It's the whole thinking outside the box thing.
Right. Right.
Like adults put themselves into boxes so firmly that we look at it, like, I think about it paradigmatically. And I talk about this all the time to some of my friends, and it gets old and boring, but it is one of those things that it's a Necker cube. And a Necker cube is the cube that you draw that's transparent, so it's two squares that connect the lines, and you can flip back and forth between the two squares. Do it sometime on a piece of paper, and if you're, you know, look
I've
at it.
I've never heard you ever talk about a Necker cube.
Yeah, but you're married to me.
I'm just kidding. All
so
the
I know
time.
You're facetious.
All the time.
But this paradigm shift, and it's used a lot in philosophy. Yeah. It's used by the scientific revolutions when you have Kuhn actually doing it, and I'll get it all, you know, like technical and all that kind of stuff. But it's not my idea, is what I'm saying. Like Wittgenstein, like
right.
actually goes through and says, like, oh, this is how you actually do this. Yeah, okay, it's not unique. But it's very good at illustrating how we can flip back and forth between two paradigms as adults.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I can look at it this way. And then if I just flip that on its head, I can look at it this way. And I just oscillate back and forth. And some of them said that, like, scientific revolutions happen with Kuhn. Thomas Kuhn actually said it's like religious conversions. You let go of the heliocentric model of the universe. And then you, like, well, actually, yeah. geocentric model of the universe, and you obtain the heliocentric model of the universe, so the earth isn't in the middle anymore and the sun going around the outside, now you put the sun in the middle and everything makes sense all of a sudden.
So hold on, let me just back this up real quick. You double majored in college, correct?
Yeah.
What'd you double major in?
Biology and philosophy.
Okay. Okay.
Why is it like way too much right now?
No. No, you can just tell. You're like, this guy majored in biology?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
It was a lot about, you know, like philosophical concepts. And,
okay.
Okay, got it.
Okay, fair enough. So let's do this just for a second. I dug into biology to figure out the answers to what I thought life was, right? Bio, study of life. So I start digging into science. I get almost to graduation. And then I just go, yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. The answers
I need more.
I need more. So I stayed on another year. You and I, like, formalized our relationship as far as, like, you know, you live in an apartment down the way. And I continued and got a philosophy dual major. And at that point in time, when I graduated from that, I knew even less. And then they kicked me out of the real world.
I had more questions.
I'm like, I have no idea what's going on. But it was fine from the standpoint that I looked at this paradigm shift differently. And then when I went into education later on, it really made sense with me with this fluid and crystallized intelligence, because I was like, oh, yeah, adults can flip back and forth and have this religious conversion almost when they adopt a new scientific idea. Like, oh, yeah, this makes sense now. I'm going to abandon everything. All those theories, all those laws don't make sense anymore. And these are the ones that I'm going to hold on to because science can do that. So I love science because it can abandon everything for new information. Be like, boom, we got it. But we can't make new boxes. It's like we have really good boxes that we've drawn and we flip back and forth between them. But we're like, we're really bad at making new boxes as adults. And like kids are like always like, yeah, why do you, like, I don't need a box. Like, let's do not box. And we're like, what do you mean no box? I don't understand. And they're like, no, but listen, like, just let the air out of the tires and it'll be fine. And that's the way that I think of how we could be utilizing school so much better.
Well, you and I want to create critical thinkers.
I'm not going to say that that's not the goal of other people.
I'm not saying that that is not a goal of many people.
Can we just leave it there?
Yep.
Yep.
Let's leave it there.
So obviously our teaching philosophies are very progressive from the standpoint of not just political activism, but more so that we think that kids should not be taught how to integrate into a system that already exists and taught how to maintain the system that was imposed upon them. And you can obviously see my bias in the words I'm choosing. I understand. I read Pedagogy of the Oppressed. I look at it and go, yeah, it's not a banking model. We need to co-create curriculum with them. We need to make sure that they're formulating their own rules and they're inheriting a world that they have the ability to control. Like, they should be able to rewrite what the world should look like, because we don't have all of the answers. We've messed up a bunch of different things by trying to make it better. Our intentions are always good from the standpoint, but as technology increases, right? As you go from a computer that takes up the whole basement of NASA, and now we have something way more complicated that sits in our pocket, like, we just grow. And
right.
There's waste and there's problems and all that kind of stuff. And the next generation is blessed with all of the technological advances, all the society advances, all of our new ideas. But the waste is just...
I would say all the trash is there,
it's just lingering.
It's just sad.
And we can't think outside that trash. It's like, I can't think outside... I don't want to. I try my hardest, but I can't think outside a world with plastic straws.
Yeah.
Like, I just can't. Like, I don't know how... I get it. Like, I get it, but I don't. It's not because I love plastic straws. It's just... the convenience of it is just in my face all the time. It's the pressure that I'm fighting against. And my children look at it like, oh, a straw is fun. And we're like, yeah, but no. And they're like, okay, well, we'll make a mess another way. I'm like, okay, fine. Like, that's fine.
Right.
But that's the kind of thing that's there, that we've designed the system for the best way that we could possibly do it. But at the end of the day, I've just burdened them with a bunch of things that they can just let go. They can just let go of that box.
There are so many times where I think, oh my gosh, I just want to go to Sam's and buy a bunch of easy things to pack in their lunch boxes. And at the end of the day, I cannot push aside the feeling of, but all that waste.
Right.
Because, okay, there's a little recycle symbol on the applesauce, then all natural applesauce. But how much of the world's plastic gets recycled? And that number keeps going. I think they said 6% or something like
right.
that. So it's under 10%, and it's extremely tragic. And it just continues to play in my mind anytime I buy something, which is good because I am trying really, really hard to look out for my kids. I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm not saying that I don't occasionally get something that is, you know, that I could have taken a harder route or whatever. But
we cloth diapered.
Right.
We are vegan. Like, we haven't right. chose a very easy path.
No.
And I'm not like celebrating like my superiority or anything like that. It's just like, we held on to stuff. We did it. We said, this is what I want to do. And we recognize that everybody chooses their battles, and they're not easy. Like, those battles are not easy. You're like,
your
I'm not
battle,
taking a stand on this.
I was going to say, your battle of dealing with dirty diapers while I was, I don't know how far along, but still in my nauseous phase of the pregnancy, and you're cleaning all the dirty diapers from the previous child. And that is love.
Right. Because I didn't want them in landfills. Because I didn't
right.
want them to be, and I'll say it, I didn't want them to be burdened with their own shit in the future.
So therefore you are burdened currently with their shit.
Yes.
Yeah. That's love. I always, what did we used to always say? Like, love, you don't know love until you're, I think that was you that said it. You don't know love until you're elbow deep in poop, spraying it off in the toilet. It's a little bit graphic, but that is love, guys. That is true, true love.
This is just a reminder that The Delta is a member of the Heartland Pod family of podcasts. Join us every other Wednesday as we grow this show into a reflection of our lives where family, school, life, science, and politics all converge. Check out some of our other shows, including the Heartland Pod, The Flyover View, High Country, and Let's Have a Chat. Also, you can check out some of our collection of family projects on glassroomhive.com, like our family YouTube channel called Stink Finks, Nicholas's 2-minute lectures on his Hourglass Science channel, and our published books, whether it be our children's book, Dharma and Eldon and the Sandwich, or our new adult fiction like the Murray series. Another way to be transparent about progressive lives in the Midwest, glassroomhive.com. Now back to our show.
Yeah, so it was like all of those things that were actually bothering me on my drive, on my planning period, every single day that I felt like I could talk to the kids about what was actually on my mind and give them kind of some information about where I thought that they should go and what they should do. And I started seeing that we hadn't trained those kids at all to be able to handle what I was asking of them. Like, I was looking at it from, I want you to critically think on this level. And it wasn't that they didn't want to meet me there. And it wasn't that they were just lazy. It wasn't that they never knew what was expected of them. They didn't understand that. It was never that. It wasn't that there was too many of them. I had very small class sizes. But the thing is that nobody had asked them to do that by giving them the permission to do it. They had gotten to me at the age of, 16.
Yeah.
Whenever I first started seeing some of my students that weren't in STEM, when we really started to hit it and I had them like not just playing on building stuff like science fair types of things and 3D printing and all that robotic type of stuff. And I actually said, I want you to research your own thing and I want to be serious. I want you to talk about soil erosion and why tilling is bad for our environment and why it's actually increasing carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and just going into all this different stuff and how advocacy of saving the world that they were inheriting. And I think it was just intense. I think it was something that they were taken back and didn't expect at that point in time. And
well, I don't think many children are given that much say, that much choice in their own education.
It's goal from some teachers, but
you walk in and they're like, here's a syllabus. This is what we're doing. They don't say, okay, well, something that you think will affect your future. They're like, and a lot of kids, I was that way. I'm like, can you just give me something concrete that I can go off of? Because I don't want to be wrong. What if I'm wrong?
Yeah, the wrong is the problem.
Like, right.
I don't want to be wrong. I have a standardized test. I want to make sure I pass.
Right.
Like, there's no, it's not wrong or right. Like, it's different. We need different. We need new idea.
For sure.
A new idea. Like, I can't judge you and say, this is the wrong idea because that's the idea that I would accept. It's bad.
You know, I know this is not the exact same thing, but I have been, as of last year, like if I have downtime in the classroom or whatever while my kiddo is supposed to be doing something, I started drawing him little things. It was after we published our first children's book and I kept thinking, well, there's no way that I could do the artwork, like, at all. And so you did all the artwork. We wrote the story together, but then I painted it all, hand-painted it all. And so I'm like, well, yeah, I can paint within the lines, sure. And so last year, while the kids were playing or whatever, I would sit there and just kind of sketch or draw things or whatever. And so I'm not you to where I can just draw something out of my brain. I have to be looking at something.
Not yet.
So, right, right. I'd like to say that, but we shall see. And so it's now I look back on it and I thought, because sometimes the kids will say, Miss Tina, how did you learn to draw like that? I'm like, honestly, I have to be looking at something. And it took me a long time. So I'm 39. And to get to the point where I finally feel like, oh my gosh, I could do this. I could do some of the art for our books. I'm not an amazing artist, but some of these things I look back on that I've made, I'm like, holy cow. And I'm 39. It's taken me this long to go, I do have a skill.
Right.
I kind of do have a good skill.
Right.
You know? And so I just think about the kids and how, you know, what are they not realizing? What potential are they not realizing yet?
Right.
That they have.
And I think that that's the biggest thing, is that the system has been programmed to make them feel defeated.
Absolutely.
In a lot of ways. Like, yeah. there's a failure that they've done. They're incompetent. It's too confusing. They could never understand how complicated the government is. Science
so
is
let's
just,
not talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, science is just for the nerds. You're never going to be smart enough to compete with these
right.
guys. Like, it just doesn't work for us to be able to be a society that embraces change, but more so solves the problems.
I will say, as a high school student in science class, I thought, meh, it wasn't until you and I got together and you did have this excited energy. You're like, no, Christina, this is why your body does that. Or this is why what's happening inside your body when you're doing this. And I kind of fell in love with, I fell in love with science because I fell in love with you. Cheesy story. But really, for anybody who's listening, they're like, oh my God, I see where this is going. But it was you that made me really have more of a passion for science. Now, do I understand the A, G, C's, and T's kind of thing? Not so much.
I'm
but
surprised that you act like, I'm not surprised. I'm like, just like, you just rattle that off, the DNA, like nucleotides.
Yeah.
That's just awesome.
Yeah. I'm
just going to throw this in there.
Just going to throw it out there so my husband loves me a little bit more. So she does listen. No, but so yeah, but to know all of the ins and outs of science, no. But the inner workings of your body and why things happen, it's just, I mean, it's because I was around someone who had a passion for it and taught me the passion that they had. So.
Thanks.
No, thank you. Can't get too cheesy up in here.
Yeah, I know. The thing is, I think that's what's missing for a lot of teachers.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? I think that whenever they go in, they have that passion. They meet the kids with that passion. They know what school can be. They know that they can bring not only the information, but get the kids to feel like they can use it in a new way.
Yeah.
And do something beyond what school actually does. And instead, the kids just want to graduate and move on with real life. And I'm like, that's like me just putting it in the huge, like, real life. Like, nobody really wants to go do real life. Like, stay in school as long as possible.
They want to be out of under the thumb of mom and dad, or they don't know how good they have it.
Yeah, but the problem is they don't have it that good.
Right.
Because it's oppressive.
Yes.
And because it's like, it's run as far as an authoritarian type of thing, because we teach them behaviors. We teach them conditioning from a very young age because it makes school simple. Like,
yeah.
Knowing which tray to put your homework in, knowing bubbles and tails, right? And stay within the three squares and
peace and quiet.
Yeah. Like, and I'm not saying, like, I get it.
Yeah.
I completely get it. But at the same point in time, like, sometime it has to break down.
I was going to say, at some point you do have to step out of line. Yes.
And the kids just have to go, like, you know what? Like, no, like, that system doesn't work. But there's so many things built into school, like bells, that just run us on conditioned programming, habituation, without thinking. It compromises, it loops through, and it makes our brains go through a simplified version of our behavior. So our brains, to get all sciencey, but like, this is my real frustration with it. When I got to the end of school, I started seeing that I was competing against what we made them into. Like, I was asking them to do something that we physically train them not to be from the very beginning of school. So your brain is built to dedicate a bunch of energy to the thought that you're making at that point in time. So like my frontal lobe is on fire right now because I'm like trying to do as much as I possibly can to make sense of this. But later on, after I give the lecture again, or I start driving more and more, or I start cooking something more and more, or I start just walking somewhere more and more, the more and more I do something, the brain just goes, oh, I've seen this before. I don't have to look at your nose. I know it's there. I see it. I'll just ignore it. So what happens is that your brain cheats and it makes it a habit. So it can not give as much brain power to it. Doesn't devote so much oxygen and energy to overthinking it. Just says, oh, it's quick and simple. Done. It's a survival instinct. It's like just above survival instinct. It's not like breathing or heartbeat. It is honestly just a habit.
That makes sense.
And that's all we do for the first 8 years of their life is just to make them shortcuts. We give them every single shortcut possible. We said, oh, not, and I'm not talking like academically, like memorize your multiplication tables. I mean like behaviorally. Like this is how you shortcut critical thinking. We make it simple. It's not that we give you a calculator. We do it over and over again in the same way, so it's routine.
Yeah.
And by the time you're done with it, you're like, oh, this is just the way it does it. This is easy. You're not thinking. And then we're like, oh, DOK-5 and DOK-4. We want you to be able to think critically. We haven't trained you to do that. We haven't ever given you the new thing every single time. And the thing is this, and I know we're going long, but like, when I was in grad school, going for the PhD, and before I left to go back to teaching for these past 8 years, we had a conversation, and the question was, is all tests, not standardized tests, but all assessments actually just recall? No matter what, if you've seen it before, the next time you see it, is it just recall? Period. If the problem isn't new, is it always just you remembering? And from that discussion, we pretty much came to the conclusion that, yeah, if I've seen it before and I've practiced it, it's just routine. It's just habit. But instead, if I'm presented with a new problem, I'm really thinking. It's hard. And you don't know if you're going to get it right or wrong. There's no sure cut certainty that you're going to know what you're going to get on that test at the very end. You don't know the answer. That's real critical thinking. That's a crucible school. Because what I'm asking you to do is solve the world. And they go, what's the right answer? And I go, I have no idea.
But when you find out, you come back and tell me.
You come back and tell me. The world is yours if you want it.
The Delta is a MidMap Media production. You can check us out at heartlandpod.com or follow us on Twitter at The Heartland Pod. Please also consider signing up for our Patreon so that you can get exclusive merchandise as well as additional shows. And we'll talk again another time.